Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer. I am going to be reading to you today from the Decatur Herald and Review, June 22, 2015. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article titled Flood Warnings for Illinois Rivers. The article starts with a picture of Decatur's golf course. Looking down from tournament hole number one, Decatur Park District workers continued draining sand traps after hopes of at least finishing the first round on Saturday. A saturated Hickory Point was hit with rain throughout the day to prevent any restart. The picture is of a very soggy golf course. From Lincoln, the article continues. The National Weather Service has issued flood warnings for several rivers in Illinois, and transportation officials have closed some roadways. The Sangamon River at Monticello in central Illinois is under a flood warning until Sunday afternoon. The Weather Service says the rising Embera River at Lawrenceville in southeastern Illinois has inundated Lumber Mill Road. The river is expected to fall below flood stage Thursday. The Little Wabash River near Clay City in southern Illinois is also under a flood warning. The Weather Service said North Clay Road is flooded there. Moderate flooding is occurring along the Illinois River at Beardstown and other cities in central Illinois. The Weather Service said the river has flooded a parking lot in Peoria's Riverfront Village and one block of Water Street. And an article from Huey Freeman of the Herald and Review staff from Decatur starts with a picture of James Johnson of Decatur standing in front of his 1962 Super 88, who has enjoyed cruising his 1962 car for 23 years and showing it to Oldsmobile fans. The article is entitled Classic Car Owners Roll Out Their Wheels for Charity. From Decatur. Although some vehicle owners welcome rain showers to wash away road dust, that is not the case with those who show classic cars, which they spend hours primping and polishing to the point of shiny perfection. So when the forecast Sunday included a few possible sprinkles, most of the ancient treasures slated to appear at Vinny's Father's Day car show stayed in their garages. But nine intrepid souls braved the quarter inch of rain and showed up to help raise funds to feed the homeless. "We planned to have 40 to 50 cars," said Vinnie Barbie, whose trademark smile was not dimmed by the cloud cover. The show, held at the Glass House Stained Glass Store, has been rescheduled for July 24th. All proceeds will provide meals at an August 15th event at the Water Street Mission. Sam Dotson, owner of a 1961 Ford Falcon that appeared to have left the showroom a few weeks ago, wasn't going to let the threat of rain turn him away. He pointed out that there was no rust on the Falcon's original grille, nor on the window or door trim. However, he acknowledged that the chrome door handles and hood ornament were slightly pitted, but not as much as one might expect in a 54-year-old vehicle. Dotson, whose first car as a teen was a 67 Oldsmobile, also owned a 61 Falcon as a young man, so when he spotted this teal beauty with a white top parked on 24th Street near Garfield Avenue with a for sale sign on it, he couldn't resist. Amazingly, it had just 66,000 miles on it, with mostly original parts. He painted the motor, changed a few parts, and began entering it in shows. "It's a trophy getter," Dodson said, adding that it rides smoothly, despite the fact it lacks power steering and brakes. James Johnson also has won a trophy for his 1962 Oldsmobile Super 88, which he bought from the original owner in 1992 after seeing it at a garage. It wasn't on the market, but when he inquired about it, it became available. It had just 29,000 miles on the odometer. "He didn't hardly drive it," Johnson said, adding that he has just added 12,000 more miles. "I haven't driven it much either." This was the first appearance at Vinny's show, but he has shown the Olds about nine times at the show in Central Park. "It's fun looking at all the crazy people," he said. Steve Trebish, glasshouse owner, rarely shows his 66 Wimbledon white Ford Mustang convertible, which he purchased for $1,500 in 1978. But he had it on display on Father's Day. It's for a good cause, he said. Also from Decatur, an article titled, Labels Make Everyone a Tree Expert at Rock Springs. The article begins with a wonderful picture of a beaming naturalist, Jenny Garver, showing one of several trees labeled with a quick response code that allows Rock Springs Conservation Area visitors to learn the species and other information about the tree. Article written by Tony Reed of the Herald and Review staff. Poet Joyce Kilmer wrote these immortal lines, I think I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. She wrapped up her little ditty in 1913 with this last verse, poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree. God, however, wasn't much into labeling stuff, but now the Macon County Conservation District has stepped into the breach with a bold effort to graft 21st century technology onto the subject of tree identification. The result is a notebook-sized black and white metal label tacked onto trees at the Rock Springs Nature Center. The dot-patterned labels are examples of quick response codes, which can be read with any cell phone or tablet equipped with a QR code reader, which is a free download from various sources. Armed with their trusty technology, Nature Center visitors stride up to a labeled tree, scan the code, and tap into a forest of knowledge. The label itself does give the tree's common name in English, honey locust, red mulberry, hackberry, and so on. But the QR code does much more. It explains what the tree's leaves and seeds look like, where it likes to grow, the branch of the family it comes from, and lots more information, complete with accompanying pictures. The QR reader is actually sending people to a forestry website developed by Southern Illinois University, where absorbed readers can branch off in all directions to harvest more knowledge. We want to make sure people appreciate trees, said Paul Marion, executive director of the Macon County Conservation District. So this is a way to really gain some awareness, to get that appreciation so people don't just think of trees as a nuisance. Trees clean our air, and 75% of wildlife calls forests their home. Trees are a vital, renewable resource. Marion first saw them encoded while visiting the SIU campus, where QR labels are used to help forestry students tell the specific nature of the wood from the trees. Marion worked with SIU Millikan University biology professor Judy Parrish, and Millikan student Alyssa Eckberg to create the QR codes for the Rock Springs trees. We needed a young person who knows how to do this kind of stuff, said Marion, 58. We picked 19 common trees and got the labels made up and installed over the winter. The labeled trees are close to the Nature Center building near the bike path. They are already attracting lots of attention, including one recent day when the bike path became an alfresco, Meals on Wheels dining venue for clouds of mosquitoes. Swatting them blithely aside, visitor Bonnie Howard loved the idea of coated trees and said she was going to download herself a QR reader double quick. What a wonderful idea, said Howard, 76, who lives in Decatur. I'd like to know more about the trees, but I don't want to carry a book because books are heavy. This way, you can go right to the tree you want and find out all about it. Marianne said he has already been approached by master gardeners, intrigued by the idea, and wanting to do something similar for the pretty flowers and shrubs they plant around Decatur Public Library. Now satisfied he isn't barking up the wrong tree, he would like to expand the tree labeling system and use it on other conservation district sites. America has some 250 tree species, and perhaps more than 100 of them are to be found on the Rock Springs property alone, so there is plenty of room for growth. People like using technology, said Marion, and now we have an interactive way of piquing their interest to learn more about the trees around them. And more local news? Pencils for Success, collecting school supplies for foster kids. An article out of Decatur started with a picture of Templeton and Shibley, who are sorting through some of the donations already collected at Northgate Pet Grooming, showing notebooks and glue and crayons being put into special bins for distribution. This article is from Decatur, written by Donette Beckett of the Herald and Review staff. For many children, the best part of the school year is getting new school supplies. But for those in the foster care system, school supplies are the last thing on their minds. I couldn't imagine going to work without my computer or a pencil, said foster parent Mandy Shibley. To help children adjust to an already difficult situation, Shibley created Pencils for Success. During the summer, caseworkers from Webster Cantrell Hall have been encouraging companies and groups to collect school supplies from employees and club members. The next donation pickup date will be July 1st. The organization will continue to accept donations throughout July with drop-off sites at Webster Cantrell Hall and other participating businesses. If needed, businesses can schedule a pickup date and time. The fundraiser will end August 1st with the distribution of the backpacks on August 3rd. To schedule a pickup date and time, email pencilsforsuccess@yahoo.com or call 217-259-8959. The goal is 100 filled backpacks. The organization suggests businesses or civic groups hang a flyer on a popular bulletin board requesting donations for Pencils for Success. They should also follow through with a collection box in a prominent location for customers and employees. With each filled backpack costing more than $40, cash donations will also be accepted. The organization began by asking for help from whomever would offer, including churches and Facebook friends, even knocking on doors, Shibley said. As soon as Kathy Templeton learned about Pencils for Success on Facebook, she placed a container in her pet grooming business, Dirty Paws, to collect school supplies. The other groomers know helping foster children is near and dear to my heart, she said. Her family has adopted one child through foster care and has another child placed with them. I have seen firsthand what these kids come in to care with, Templeton said. It hurts your heart so bad. After becoming a licensed foster parent in March, Shibley often met with other parents for support. A problem many parents share is the lack of basic supplies needed for each child. Few children arrive at a foster home with even the basic necessities, such as a toothbrush or clothing. A child bringing a backpack full of school supplies just doesn't happen. And it is the foster care parent's responsibility to find the supplies, said Holly Newborn, director of development at Webster Cantrell Hall. Pencils for Success organizers have researched local stores for the best deals. Of course, the backpack is the most expensive item, Shibley said. We will be accepting only new and clean backpacks and supplies. The organization has collected a small percentage of listed items. So far, we have 5 businesses who have offered to put out a collection jar or box, Shibley said. Caseworkers will be making stops at the registered businesses and organizations. They are excited about this program, Newbon said. They have a big heart for their children. And from Valerie Wells, Herald and Review staff writer, article entitled Smash Junior Campers Get Lesson in Playground Design, from Decatur. If you want a playground kids will like, it's only logical to ask kids to design it. At Smash Junior Camp, a cooperative effort between Millikan University and Decatur Schools, students met with BLDD architects who asked them to design a playground for Pier 36 at Nelson Park. Though the campers weren't following a strict theme this summer, the idea is for them to take real-world problems and find a solution, with the kids doing most of the heavy lifting. Adults are there for guidance. "It's a theoretical play area," said Counselor Devon Logue. "It was supposed to be a play area that went in there, but for some reason it got scrapped. So we're trying to come up with a plan, a nice playground to put there that maybe someday could go there." Camper Kate Runceval said the kids visited several existing playgrounds to find out what they liked and what they didn't like about each one, making notes in their journals and then going back to their base camp at Dennis School to research playground equipment online. Their budget is $500,000, which sounds like a lot of money. "It's not that much," Kate said, "and the reason it's not that much is that play equipment costs a bundle. A typical playground setup with slide and swings and such costs thousands and thousands of dollars." One of the things the kids noticed at Sunnyside Park is that there wasn't much for older kids to do. It's set up more for little children. Kate said there are only two swings, one for a baby and one for an older child. So her ideal playground has a lot more swings. "There needs to be enough swings so everybody can get a turn without waiting too long," she said. Iverson Woods liked the playgrounds with plenty of shade and benches, but he's also in favor of a spider, which is a dome-shaped climbing toy. The children are divided into groups, each one assigned to research and prepare a report on a different kind of equipment or feature of the ideal playground, and those reports will be presented to BLDD architects on June 30th. "If they like our ideas, they might use them," Iverson said. And from Bloomington, an article entitled "Bloomington Restaurant Closes After Liquor Restrictions." This is from Maria Nagel, Lee News Service writer. "The owner of a West Side restaurant that was ordered to stop serving liquor after 10:30 p.m. is contemplating relocating the business, according to his attorney. Handwritten signs taped to doors and windows at Eric's Restaurant, 903 West Wood Street, say, "Eric's will be closed until further notice." The signs were dated June 13th, the first weekend after the city served owner Eric Trujillo with an official notice of the Bloomington Liquor Commission's June 9th order curtailing his late-night liquor sales. A June 13th post on the restaurant's Facebook says, "Eric's restaurant will be closed until further notice. Thank you for supporting Eric's restaurant, and I will keep you posted. Have a great day. Goodbye. This is hard." Trujillo could not be reached for comment. "He is closed and is thinking about keeping it closed and moving to a different location because he's completely worn out," said attorney Hal Jennings. "He's uncertain about the future of that place because he thinks there may be one or two neighbors who would complain if somebody honked their horn there after 11 p.m. Trujillo is exploring the possibility of moving to a location where there are no neighbors," Jennings added. "He would have to apply for a new liquor license in a different location. I don't want him to leave, but if he's going to operate like a bar, he shouldn't be in any residential neighborhood," said Mayor Terry Renner, who heads the Liquor Commission. "Last weekend, the neighborhood was quiet for the first time in months," said Tony Kindle, who lives on the same block as the establishment. "We're glad there has been a resolution regarding the noise because of the alcohol," Kindle said. "We don't want the restaurant to close. We don't want to see anybody go out of business. But the bar part was very annoying." Earlier this month, the city filed a 2-count civil complaint against Trujillo after allegations that the business was the source of late-night noise, particularly on the weekends, that repeatedly disturbed neighbors and disrupted the peace of the neighborhood near Miller Park. Last week, the commission initially fined the restaurant $3,500 for a single violation of the city's noise ordinance on May 17th, and then revoked its restaurant liquor license for repeated noise complaints since March. Those penalties were waived, however, when Trujillo agreed to the ban on late-night liquor sales. I don't see why he can't work with the restrictions of not serving alcohol after 10:30 p.m., Renner said. He was open for nearly 4 years without a liquor license, and he seemed to thrive. We never had any trouble with him until he got a liquor license and had video poker machines. Last fall, Trujillo was sanctioned for violating noise ordinances, operating an outdoor beer garden illegally, and having errors in his liquor sales records. From Decatur, an article entitled, County Officials Look for Ways to Pay New Jury Fees. This article written by Ryan Voiles of the Herald and Review staff. A new law and state inaction have left Macon County officials pondering how to afford new jury fees. This week marks the first time the new law has been implemented, which requires counties to pay jurors $25 for the first day and $50 for each additional day they serve. With two jury cases on the docket, both expected to last at least 8 days, Circuit Clerk Lois Durbin said the two cases alone are expected to cost the county about $15,000 in jury fees. County Chairman Kevin Greenfield said it's an issue the county will need to keep an eye on as they look to find ways to pay the extra costs. He added it would be up to the county's finance committee to find ways to fix the potential budget hole the new fees will produce. The new law drastically changes how Macon County has paid its jurors in the past. Jurors had received $10 a day and 10 cents a mile. It also limits the number of jurors to 6 for civil trials instead of the traditional 12. County officials had been hopeful that an amended bill would be passed by the General Assembly last month that would require jurors to be paid $20 for the first and second days of duty and $32 for each day thereafter until December 1st. It would also allow a county board to pass an ordinance or resolution to collect a juror service fee not to exceed $15, which may be paid in civil actions. But despite passage by the Illinois House and Senate, the bill remains in committee limbo as lawmakers turn their attention to the budget. We're still hoping we'll see some action on that, Durbin said. The county spent just more than $48,000 in 2014 jury fees. If the new law had been in effect, Durbin has said the county would have spent $209,200. Proponents of the law said the extra money would help residents be more willing to do their civic duty, while some county officials complained that the cost of paying more to jurors will be more than the savings that come with the smaller civil juries. According to the Illinois Trial Lawyers Association website, Illinois juror rates are the lowest of the 50 states and have not been increased in 40 years. An article entitled Event Stresses Key Fatherhood Role from June 21st, Father's Day, written by Ryan Voiles of the Herald and Review staff, begins with a picture showing a father and son. Aiden Johnson listens to his father, Patrick Johnson, as they wait for the Caring Black Men's Father's Day breakfast program to start. They were talking about Aiden finishing the year as an honor student at Our Lady of Lourdes School. Continuing with the article. The old saying goes, it takes a village to raise a child, but Jeffrey Perkins has a different take on that as it applies to Decatur and other communities. What if we need to build the village first in order to raise the child, he told nearly 30 attendees Saturday morning at the Main Street Church of Living God. Perkins, founder and president of Caring Black Men, was among those who took part in a breakfast and discussion about the ideas of manhood and fatherhood ahead of Father's Day. The informal event allowed residents to take the microphone and give their thoughts on some of the challenges faced in the community with regard to raising children and the importance of parents to help provide structure and rules. Plenty can be daddy's any time, but it takes time to be a father, said T.J. Jackson. The contrast between being a person who just has a child to someone who actually raises their child was one that was brought up several times through the discussion, with some lamenting the number of children who do not have an adult figure. Perkins told the group about his own experience as a child, where he was raised until he was 4 by parents who were not his own. Even though they lacked a blood connection, Perkins said both helped mold him into the person he is today, with a specific focus on the father. He wasn't a rich man, but he raised me and gave me a father figure in my life that I wouldn't have had otherwise, Perkins said. The first question of the day was brought up by Aiden Johnson, who came to the breakfast with his father and grandfather. What about sonhood? He asked the crowd, adding the responsibilities put on him and his family. The idea of sonhood struck James Moore, who said it is the first step toward achieving something greater. Sonhood is what leads to being a father and leads to being a man, Moore said. The breakfast and venue were provided by the Main Street Church of Living God, with the Reverend Thomas Walker saying he wanted to keep the doors open and provide a chance to keep a dialogue going on an important community issue. If there has ever been a time for fathers to step up and be fathers and exemplify love and show the young men how to be fathers, it's with Father's Day around the corner, where fathers and sons can come together, he said. And an article titled Community Connects at the 3rd Annual Macon Street Fest of Macon, written by Rachel Rogers of the Herald and Review staff. Cameron Fisk isn't terribly partial to cherry pie, but that didn't keep him from diving into one face first on Saturday. The 14-year-old was one of 4 winners in the pie-eating contest at the 3rd Annual Macon Street Fest, which Fisk attends with his family regularly. He didn't know about the contest ahead of time, but once he found out, he had to give it a try. You gotta get messy in order to have some fun, he said. There's not much strategy to it. I just pushed my head in and ate as much as I could. I ate pretty much all of it. By the end, the dozen young contestants' faces were hidden by a layer of mashed-up pie remnants. Fisk said he had competed more for the entertainment aspect of it rather than for the pastry. It's all right, but I'm not crazy about pie, he said. When the 2-day festival was first established, it featured a barbecue, car show, and 1 band. The event has grown each year, now filling the Macon Uptown area with a line of 25 craft vendors and various other booths, as well as a kids' zone and a lineup of 5 local bands, in addition to the car show and chicken fry. We have Street Fest that has grown to accommodate a kickoff parade, dog show, and 5K race. Huggins said the small-town atmosphere contributes to the event's success. Anything that's needed, all you have to do is say the word, and they're there to help out, he said. A chance to cool off from the heat and the afternoon sunshine, children also participated in a series of water games, including a relay, where team members would pass along a soaking t-shirt to put on, a water balloon toss, and an ice cube melting challenge. And we will now take a short break and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.